Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. We know that a variety of indigenous perspectives are important to share. A diversity of opinions, voices, and insights from our Native nations help us all grow. Today we'll hear from indigenous poets who draw from their identity as lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, and two-spirit writers. They sometimes tell deeply personal stories and paint a vivid picture of adversity, strength, and their relationships with their culture and community. Join us for this discussion right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Congresswoman Charisse Davids is among more than 200 lawmakers to sign on to the articles of impeachment against President Trump after last week's violence at the Capitol. They're accusing the president with inciting violence against the government of the United States. Davids says the violence at the Capitol was shameful and an attack on democracy. She told Kansas City's 41 Action News last week the president had a role in the violence.
We have a president right now who not only condones that, but also encouraged it. And he has demonstrated that he is not fit to hold public office, let alone occupy the Oval Office.
House Democrats are urging Vice President Mike Pence to invoke the 25th Amendment to remove President Trump. They plan to move forward with impeachment if Pence takes no action. Meanwhile, the Associated Press reports President Trump told reporters Tuesday at the White House he wants no violence, and the impeachment is causing tremendous anger in the nation. Wyoming's Task Force on Missing and Murdered Indigenous People has released a report on the severity of the problem in the state. As Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports, the hope is that other states will follow the lead.
The survey found that Indigenous people make up 21% of homicides in Wyoming, even though only 3% of the population is Indigenous. But University of Wyoming survey and analysis research scientist Emily Grant says these numbers could be underestimates. For instance, murder rates could be off because coroners misclassify victims.
And a lot of times it's not necessarily checked with people from the community, a family member, something like that. So it's really likely that they could be miscategorized as Hispanic, Latino, white. If it's the wrong race on there, then it doesn't show up.
Grant says this is why law enforcement needs more training and families need assigned advocates to guide them through the web of legal jurisdictions. Grant says she also looked at media portrayals of such cases in Wyoming.
It's overly graphic. So, you know, if someone dies with firearms, you know, they may say a gunshot wound. But in Indigenous cases, we're seeing like very graphic depictions of the body, of the crime scene, of the circumstances that are just extra violent.
Being considered less than? That's unacceptable.
That's State Representative and Northern Arapaho citizen Andy Clifford, who sits on Wyoming's Task Force on Missing and Murdered Indigenous People.
But yes, the media needs to do a better job. There's somebody's son, there's somebody's daughter, there's somebody's dad. They were loved.
In the last 10 years, 710 Indigenous people went missing in Wyoming. The majority were girls. The data showed they went missing from 22 of Wyoming's 23 counties. Clifford says this isn't a reservation problem, it's a state problem.
There's a multitude of Indigenous tribes in all counties, as the report revealed. We are Americans. We go for jobs. We go for education. People fall in love. They moved to towns in Wyoming. And so that may be a little surprising too, but I know we're all over. We are all over.
9 Indigenous people are missing in Wyoming right now. For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards.
The National American Indian Housing Council is reminding tribes of Tuesday's deadline to apply for emergency rental assistance funds. The recent COVID-19 relief package included $800 million for rental and utility assistance for tribal communities. Tribes must apply for the funding through the Treasury Department by midnight. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
N- National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
If you're a Native American expanding or starting a business, the Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program supports your lender so your lender can make the business loan you need. Info by emailing dci@bia.gov. The Office of Indian Energy and Economic Development supports this program. Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working across the nation to address the opioid crisis in tribal communities. Information and support at aaip.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shiriktui via Skype. Poetry is deeply personal. Poets create art and vibes with words to make you feel just a little of what they're feeling. In this hour, we'll talk with Indigenous, LGBTQ, and Two-Spirit poets about their work and why it's important to them to take and express themselves with words. We asked one Indigenous poet about why it's important to hear Indigenous LGBTQ2 voices in poetry. Here is Tanner Menard, a poet from the Itaqipikashuk Nation.
Queer, trans, and two-spirit Indigenous poets should be listened to because we are connected to an understanding of what it means to be outside of what modern people would call a binary that transcends the abstract thought forms that people use to identify themselves nowadays. And our understandings are ancient. They're just the original way of being, and we're included in that. And our poetry expresses that. And we're able to exist and thrive in this modern world in a way that is very needed for people to understand and to begin to apprehend. I encourage everyone to really pay attention to what Indigenous queer people are saying right now, because we see things in a way that others do not see them. We have a beautiful medicine to share with humanity.
Ann Tanner is also a community organizer and helped put an online event on in December called the Queer Poetry Salon. He couldn't be on the show with us today, but here is a poem he shared with us.
Having lost myself in the river, having talked to a monster who also being an angel, we drank early before we knew the cost when we cross uninhibited. For a moment, lost in a color, we blind ourselves, and where are we now? The something unsecured left to part and wade. An atmosphere in this fear that we debate, and where an anger that I know now to be ancient. Now to be ancient is a precious thing, and you, ancient friend, you came around again with your asteroid in my thigh. Now what is this state of presence when observed goes missing, personal, softly like sod grass swaying? You were a sort of turbulence that I needed to see about interiority. A synonym for soft, the original name of this title, let me shuffle the pages open to another. Your throat, I touched it, blood and wind mingled, and until this thread leading out of the star blanket to where we all must go, the one true road, dusted space pollen.
And that again was Tanner Menard. What did you get from that poem? Celebrate it with us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. In this hour, we will hear from more LGBTQ2 poets today. And we'd like to hear from you too. What do you think is important to hear, especially in these times, especially from our Indigenous LGBTQ2 community? And if you are an Indigenous LGBTQ2 poet, you are welcome to join us as well. We are at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And today we are going to start off in Phoenix, Arizona. We have Tate Walker with us. And Tate,
is a two-spirit storyteller, and Minikoju Lakota. Our pleasure to have her here. Tate, welcome back, I guess, to Native America Calling.
Thanks so much. Happy to be here.
And Tate, let's celebrate Tanner a little bit of what we heard there in the beginning, just his take on why this Indigenous voice is important, as well as how we use poetry. And any reflections that you'd like to make just hearing the gift he gave us?
Definitely. And I think what you just said as a gift, but also pulling out a word Tanner used with medicine, you know, I think more than ever now in particular, folks are seeking ways to heal and connect. Indigenous queer poetry is one place for that happens, for me in particular, but I know for a lot of folks, poetry is that medicine they're looking for. And absorbing the work of other Indigenous queer poets and being able to gift a part of myself, you know, in a safe space like what Tanner was able to provide with the Queer Poetry Salon, you know, that's a necessary dose of creative medicine. Having folks participate in that healing with us, whether they're queer themselves or not, that's a magical way to connect and share our experiences in ways we're often unable to for whatever reason. And having those connections happen on such a large scale, like Zoom or Facebook Live, with Indigenous queer poets across the country, you know, that's icing on the cake, or, you know, honey on the fry bread. Hey.
Yes. And Tate, I was first introduced to you because of words and the work that you were doing as a journalist and as an editor. And Tate, for you, what kind of journey have words taken you on to this space, especially of poetry?
Ooh, good question. Yeah, no, I'm a writer by trade. That's 15, even more than that now, years of daily newspaper experience, right? You know, magazines, like you mentioned, blogging, editor, you know, that kind of storytelling, it's still storytelling, very needed and necessary, but it's also very formulaic. And there can be some creativity, but it's usually within really specific rules, like leads or hooks or word counts, things like that. And that kind of writing, while amazing and, again, necessary for a fragile democracy, it can be really capitalistic and soul-sucking. I'm a recovering newspaper reporter because of those very issues. And poetry, it's so freeing. It doesn't have to rhyme, but it can. It doesn't have to have structure, but it can. And it doesn't have to be a certain length. And as somebody who's working toward that elder status in a few decades, you know, I'm lengthening my poems, circling up. But how a poem looks and sounds and feels, you know, is an endless journey of self-discovery, not just for me as a writer, but for my audience too. And I love the feeling of performing my poetry and experiencing the reaction of the audience. And sometimes I'm just myself as the audience, but, you know, the reaction when, you know, a zinger lands or a pun hits or even a gut-wrenching memory is shared with others who know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes, the power of poetry, there's a lot in it. And you know what, Tate, we would like you to share some of that power with us. Take us to one of your poems.
Sure. So I'm going to read a poem that speaks to what I think a lot of folks can identify with if they have a name that isn't a common colonial one, if you will. Names are all very important and secret, but some of us just have a little extra work to do to get ours across. So this one, the poem is called "I Like Your Accent." This goes out to all the folks with two names thick and sticky for colonized tongues to dominate. To those with names you can't find in baby books or on gas station keychains, and whose name is always spelled wrong on the invitation. This goes out to the folks with names that fill uninitiated mouths full of too many inconvenient syllables, so you learn to answer to extended, hey. To those with names no one ever confuses with the Sarahs and Sean's with an H that never makes teachers stumble, and who have never experienced roll call anxiety. This goes out to the folks with names always said too quietly or too quickly and always too exotic for ignorant ears, too lazy to interrupt their status quo combos. To those whose names cause others to choke So they cut you down to bite size and drop pieces of you like crumbs to find their way back to mediocrity. This goes out to the folks whose names are accented with a symphony of notes out of range to the tone oblivious, to those with names that get remixed with dead air in concert halls of generic white noise. My name is Tate. Tate, that's a weird name. Tate, no, it's not short for Tatiana. Tate that said over the phone can sometimes sound like Patsy. Tate, who the playground bully is called, Theater Tot. Ugh. Our names that get fumbled and dropped in the mud, only to be carelessly swept up and whitewashed into a nickname, or judged too difficult and sent to the do-not-hire bin, translated into something more palatable to someone who thinks ketchup is spicy, but can pronounce Shorsa, Joaquin, and Charlize with ease. Remember, your sticky thickness tastes like honey to the ones who named you, your mysteries admired and adored without translation. Remember, no trendy trinket will ever hold up to the timelessness of the alphabet your ancestors recognize. Remember to enjoy the awkward blunders of the person across from you suddenly forced to pay more attention to a name that has survived eons of oceans, explorers, walls, wars, conquistadors, settlers, genocide, and public schools. Make them carry the weight of your name on a tongue that's done little to no heavy lifting. My name is Tate. Tate, the Lakota messenger god of wind who commands the four directions. Tate, a mother, partner, and good relative. Tate, a braid tightened with the lyrical roundness of Great Plains dynastic vowels and the sacred medicine of the prairie's punctuated consonants. Ours are names that stretch the imagination and lay the foundation to understanding who we are and where we belong. We are not Shakespearean roses to be called just anything, but fields of immemorial beauty seeded with story and song. Ours are the names of ceremony between the lips and the breath that created them, even and especially if you named yourself. Our names demand accountability, deserve practice, and exude prayer. Anyone lacking the will to pronounce and spell with humble accuracy expose themselves as undeserving of your truest magic. Your delicious honey name reminds the mouth how sweet the colonized lips taste when animated by totemic fluency, a dancing name full of vitality and memory, its worth noted in every digraph and glottal stop, a trove of diacritical treasures only the worthy can find. Thank you.
Ooh, Tate Walker, thank you for opening up this space even larger. We'll do it. We'll do even more coming up after the break. Hang tight. Online learning went into place to protect students and staff at the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. Even then, education officials knew it wasn't as rigorous as in-person classes. Now researchers and administrators are calculating the cost of online-only learning for Native students. We'll hear more about it on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship and want to talk, Strongheart's Native Helpline is a confidential and anonymous domestic violence helpline for Native Americans available at 1-844-762-8483 or connect with a live advocate by using the Chat Now button at strongheartshelpline.org. Advocates offer support and referrals for resources daily, 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. Central Time. This program supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we're focusing on Indigenous LGBTQ2 poetry. And are you a fan of poetry? What can poetry do that other forms of literature can't? Join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Right before the break, you heard a piece from Tate Walker, who is a two-spirit storyteller. She is Minikonju Lakota, and they are very talented, as you can hear. You can give us a ring, share your thoughts with Tate by calling 1-800-996-2848. Tate, we left him with some fire right before the break, and just want to hear, you know, some reflections on those words and what it means to just say them again. Please share.
my words. I, you know, when I say my poetry, it's a little bit of healing that happens, if you will. And I mentioned before, you know, it's very much a medicine, and not just the, you know, for me, but I hope for other folks too. But it's a reclaiming, if you will, for me, that poem in particular, but a lot of poetry for me is that way. Things that I wouldn't normally be able to express in like an editorial or a news piece. And especially because something like mispronouncing my name happens so often, and it's such a deep and vital part of myself, that to have it expressed in poetry and even like on a platform like this is, I'm on a little bit of a poetry high right now, Tara. So it feels pretty good.
And so many things, you know, we can all relate to with the work that you're bringing forward, because identity is huge in what we do, where we go, where we want to be. And Tate, when you talk about your own identity through poetry, I think it takes us to a deeper layer than, as you said, like an editorial would bring forward, where we even get to feel the emotions, and then to have you voice it adds another layer to it. And understanding is important for many different reasons. And when someone can connect to your poetry and understand more about you, your path, your understandings, your passions, what does that mean to you?
Oh, wow. That's a great question and great observations. It's huge, and in a way that I don't know that I can express adequately. But when, you know, poetry has this way of interacting, if you will, in a very visceral sense, especially when you find a poem or poetry that you appreciate. Because, back up a little bit here, I think a lot of us had experiences with poetry in school that maybe weren't super positive. A lot of us were very much forced to read dead white men, right? And the things that they thought were important. And, you know, some of the stuff about nature and two paths and, you know, telltale hearts and things like that can be super exciting, but also sometimes unrelatable. And having poetry that I think is expressed by maybe somebody who identifies in a way that you identify, or it comes from a place you come from, or even just his experience in the world in a similar manner, can be very validating, especially when you talk about identity. For me, that's what queer poetry does. I surround myself with it as much as I can because it reflects me and what's happening. I might not be able to relate, you know, specifically with a you know, critical incident, but I know I come from another place, a similar place, and to have be surrounded by that kind of poetry is truly, I keep saying it, medicine. But we all need different ways to heal, and different medicines work differently for different folks. And this is my jam for sure.
And maybe yours too. If you want to share some thoughts, what kind of healing, what kind of medicine does poetry have in your life? Give us a ring, 1-800-996-2848. Tate, we're going to make room for another voice who is joining us on occupied Ahaloni land, aka San Francisco, California. We have Mason J. Mason is an artist, cultural worker, and healer. Mason, thank you for being with us. Welcome to Native America Calling.
Hi there. How's it going?
It's going pretty good. It's on fire. You want to set some more fire to all of this with some of your creativity, I'm sure. And Mason, anything you want to share about what you've heard so far?
Just an echoing of the sentiments that I've heard so far. They really resonate with me. I have a bit of a different experience as an urban Indian who was adopted out at first. So I kind of had to wander my way back into the circle, and I owe a lot of that to the Bay Area American Two-Spirit Bates, who are actually having a powwow coming up soon. So I think that's kind of where it lands for me, is it's just like, yes, this is my experience, and I feel glad to be amongst my Two-Spirit siblings right now to share my experience and my words, my word medicine.
And you know what, Mason? Take us to your words. Please share some of your poetry.
Yeah, I've got two poems for you. Would you like me to read them both, or would you like me to come back to one?
Let's do one, and then we'll give them another down the road.
All righty. So this poem, I read a lot about San Francisco, like you've so nicely introduced. I'm living on occupied Ohlone land, although this is not my people's homeland. This is my homeland. This is where I was born and raised. I was raised out here not by indigenous people of Turtle Island, but the indigenous people of Okinawa. So I came up with, despite not being raised on res, I came up with a very indigenous upbringing as well. So I wrote this poem as an ode to my grandmother, and I started sharing it around circles because that's talk story is the islander way of referring to our talking circles. And so talk story is something I engage in as a daily practice with elders, youth, and even people I disagree with. And so I started sharing this poem around in those groups, and everyone was saying, oh, you know, that sounds like my grandmother. You know, that sounds like my grandmother, and telling me the stories of their grandmothers. And I thought, how can I tell more of a story so this makes this more my grandmother, but also more everyone's grandmother? And so this is called San Francisco's Grandmother 2020. I wrote this about 2 days before Shelter in Place and read it at the Two Spirit Festival we had out here called Weaving Spirits, hosted by my friend Javier Selfesquez in Manda Lakes. But this is San Francisco's grandmother. San Francisco's grandmother. If you're lucky enough to find a doorbell, she'll let you stay with her for weeks, your whole life if you like. You'll play jack, hopscotch, heat, 1 foot off the gutter, get scolded for forgetting to take the meat out of the freezer. This is your home, with government cheese, quesadillas, and frijoles for breakfast, sage, wheatgrass, rose, and Florida water, King's Roll Hawaiian, Miracle Whip, and turkey sandwiches before dinner, Werther's Originals dropped into an A&W root beer float at bedtime. You don't have to love living with her if you don't want to, but you will rub your grandmother's feet with peppermint lotion. You will pretend to enjoy violet candies, find ways to be helpful, run out and get the mail, carry the groceries up the stairs. Every Jeopardy Daily Double you will memorize, and every drama on Young and Restless. Because she offers prayers in the face of danger, keeps vigil over her children long after the Star-Spangled Banner plays, and will always have space for you, even if you have to move away. Matriarchy is the heart of San Francisco, and although outsiders and some will say she's dead, I know her heart hasn't stopped. She's just having seismic tremors.
Very nice. Mason Jay with us. You want to tell him what you thought of that poem? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. And Mason, you really bring up a huge thing that is important to us, is place and relating to it. And then even personifying things, it gets really fun when you open up some of that. And Mason, what would you like people to know of what also rests within this poem for you?
There's a lot of things that also rest within this poem for me. I think the first that came up as I was writing it was the balance of things. If I'm really, as a two-spirit person, and as someone who lives a dual identity as both a Black person and a Native person, you know, before I was ever even visually seen as Native beyond anyone who is not Native, I am read as Black. And so I was thinking about how I experienced San Francisco and how my Black grandmothers and my Native grandmothers, both Okinawan and Indigenous to Ohlone lands, Shoshone lands, Creek lands, all over, my Native grandmothers, how they are cycles. And, you know, how my Black identity and my Native identity exist in dualities, and the grandmother is the duality of, you know, these organic things like prayers and rose water and sage, and then these very inorganic things that have been brought to us, you know, like sugar, these sodas, you know, Miracle Whip, things that are not very Indigenous. And so I was thinking about that, and you know, how solar energy is the reflection of self and how lunar energy is our reflection of origin. And so I got really kind of thinking about what is the reflection of my origin? Who is my grandmother? Who are my grandmothers? Who are the grandmothers that when we hear grandmothers talked about, they usually do not sound like our grandmothers. If I could describe my grandmother to someone who had never met an Indigenous grandmother, how would I describe her? And that's the same way I feel about San Francisco, is a lot of people have ideas about how my city operates based on media depictions or based on the neo-colonization that's happening here that is a repeat of things that have been happening here, and the desecration of two-spirit, you know, identity that is happening here, even by our own LGBT people. You know, the specific Indigenous two-spirit identity is being neglected in what is supposed to be the most gay-friendly area in the nation. So it was all of those things, and being like, how do I get these people to understand my identity? This isn't so much about me being two-spirit as it is so much about matriarchy and, you know, land rights and things like that, the access to things like even having food.
And, you know,
well, A, San Francisco is a very special place, and I miss roaming the streets there and just feeling the energy that comes from, you know, such a great place, and, you know, understanding its indigenous roots too are important. And a lot of it has been forgotten. And when you wake things up that have been forgotten, that have been overlooked, and you use poetry as the vehicle for you, Mason, you know, what is it that maybe you are doing for the future?
Yes, I do a lot of the future. In addition, like you said in my intro, I'm also a healer. I also work with all sorts of things. I work with spirit in many ways, and that's actually a big part of my poetic process. I joke that I'm just the hand that Creator uses to write his words. So I think the balance of restoring that energy and learning that energy from my elders and sitting with them is my goal in poetry. That's kind of what I've been known for, is someone who will listen to anything you have to say, and you might hear it in a poem in a few years. So that's the way I use my medicine. And as a two-spirit person, I have the gift of being able to communicate with people who are masculine and people who are feminine, and to embody both. You know, I can laugh and sit and joke with grandmothers, but I can also sit around the fire and, you know, just razz the boys. And so it makes it easier being two-spirit, and also being mixed, being less of a threat, and in some cases more of an outsider, so people are more willing to share with me. I feel lucky in that way, in that since I do not know my tribal affiliation, that I am pan-tribal, but also very direct in my spiritual practice. So it's not that I'll just attend anything for Indians. I'm very specific about what I engage in. And I think that's the process that leads the spiritual aspect of my work, is spirit kind of tells me, go with these people, go with those people, write these words, do these things. And I work a lot with nature, specifically with the birds. The birds deliver my words to me, often in dreams or through other people.
Well, Mason, it is a pleasure to meet you. And I got a caller on the line who'd like to jump in this conversation. If you would also like to share, give us a ring. How does poetry strike you? Does it strike you differently than other forms of storytelling? 1-800-996-2848 is the number. We're going to say hi to Michael, who is in Jemez Pueblo, tuned in on KUNM. Michael, thank you for giving us a ring. You're on air.
Yeah, thanks, Tara, for taking my call. Yeah, that last poem was really good. Like you said, a lot of grandmas, especially indigenous grandmas, have that certain wave, that certain flow, the certain brain wave of their upbringing, and then trying to teach whoever the story is going, especially if it's family, to teach them a lesson on the past, the future, and even present. And it's a melody. It's almost a song that they're singing it, because they, you know, like I would say, a song is prayer. And also, I think a lot of baby boomers were introduced to two-spirit by the movie Little Big Man. You know, it won an Academy Award, and it was in a tribal setting where it was introduced to the world as a part of the culture.
And Michael, I think, you know, thinking of that and how much has been suppressed of what is a part of who we are, about our makeup as indigenous people, it's interesting to just kind of think about when we wake certain things up, or when we push forward things that have been suppressed. And your observation on when you feel this came about is interesting. And I think just hearing more of this dialogue too, or just even the words two-spirit, and we need to explain a little bit more. Tate, I'm going to turn to you. Any comments?
Yeah, I think, I like what Michael said about some folks being introduced to this concept of two-spirit, which really was actually created pretty recently when you consider, you know, it's very much a time immemorial concept and different for every tribe. Always good to put that note in there. But two-spirit came around as a concept in 1990. It's kind of a derivative of a Anishinaabe word. And I think Mason mentioned, you know, it's kind of a understanding that the feminine and masculine have very intertwined roles, even if societies have separated those roles into a binary, meaning this inability to sort of separate or just to come together. They're very separate. So men do this, women do this, and that's it, which is super confining, right? Like, we had women who couldn't wear pants for many years because of this, or men who can't wear pink. And, you know, this is not healthy ways to live and be. But when it comes to, now, I think this generation in particular of young people and young adults are really embracing this idea that there doesn't have to be a binary. I see a lot of kids that I work with in a nearby reservation here in Phoenix Valley, where, queer is such a common term now and a very much accepted term among the young people. And it's just so beautiful because it's not something I grew up with as being something that was accepted. Very much had to be hidden in violent ways. And that's, led to a lot of my poetry, if you will. But, to see these young people come up with this understanding that there's just more, right? I mean, not even a linear more. You know, a lot of people are like, oh, there's a scale of what it is to be masculine or feminine. And it's not a scale, man. It's like a galactic solar system of opportunity and experiences, that are constantly evolving and shifting. And I just love that. And I also want to say, too, that it's really important that when we talk about Indigenous queers, not all Indigenous queers are Two-Spirit, right? And not all Two-Spirit would identify themselves as queer or LGBTQ+. That's totally personal, and Two-Spirit is only for Indigenous folks. It's been appropriated, I think, by a lot of non-Indigenous folks, and there's a harm in that, right? We talk about identities being overtaken, identity as a Native person, identity as, say, a man or a woman, identity as mother or land protector, but especially identity as a queer or Two-Spirit person. Sure.
And it's important to really have this conversation too, because so much can be lost when we don't understand. More ahead, hang tight.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians and the SAMHSA-sponsored Opioid Response Network, working with tribal communities across the nation to address the opioid crisis. Breaking the cycle starts with preventing opioid misuse, treating opioid use disorder with medications and counseling, and recovery support during all phases of recovery. If you or a loved one is challenged by opioid use disorder, you can find additional information at aaip.org.
Thanks for joining us today here on Native America Calling, and we are hearing some creations from our Indigenous LGBTQ2 community. And if you are a poet, you're welcome to join us too. There is still time to join. We are at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. On the line with us today is Mason J. and Tate Walker. And thanks to our caller, Michael, before the break. And Mason, I just wanted to give you a moment. Anything you want to reflect on, go ahead.
I'm sure. Yeah, I would love to reflect on this idea of history, too, because it is so important. I left out that, in my everyday role, I am a historian and an archivist. And the specialty of my work is not only Two-Spirit stuff, but just communities of color and the importance of that and sharing your stories. Even spaces like this allow us to get our stories out, and those are really important. The more I do this work as an archivist, the more I see it as important for our stories to be told, and the more it feels like a hare jumping across the meadow to go fetch those stories from everyone. I feel like I've got this spring-like action around me at all times, and I feel like this now is the best time to be doing this because we have so many more ways to communicate with each other. You know, our natives are figuring out, how to use Zoom, how to use all these platforms that were originally created for people in positions of power. They've been now kind of inundated by us who know how to actually use them. And so I think that's one of the most important things that I would put in right now is that every device you're even listening to this broadcast on right now is organic. It comes from quartz or something like that to power it. So to use these technologies the same way we would endow the objects that we use in ceremony is my advice for Two Spirits right now, is to amplify your voice, even if no one is listening, to have that record around, because they will do everything to stop us from recording the ways that we exist, because that's the medicine to harmony and resolution and to healing and to spiritual growth. And what I was saying is happening right now is an extreme and a quick return to indigeneity. Both Black and both Native, we're just getting walking backwards, you know, being walked back to the house after we cut up in the street for, you know, 500, 600, 800 years.
Yes, a lot of legacy there with that too. And when you think of technology, I understand that there was something that brought a lot of poets together called the Queer Poetry Salon that took place. And so there you go, you know, talking about using this technology to share space and, you know, tell our stories and talk about what is important to us. We're doing some of that today here too. If you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. Another poet is on the line. They're going to join us today from Salie, Arizona. We have Jake Skeets. He is a poet and he is Dene. Our pleasure to have him here. Jake, welcome.
Hello. Nice to be here.
And Jake, for you, you know, you've heard a lot about, you know, what it means to use these words to talk about identity, to talk about different things. And for you, what do you use poetry to share, maybe even open up more? Go ahead.
Thank you for that question. Yeah, I think what has been shared, I also share as well in terms of the power poetry has in regards to Native communities across the country and across the globe. For me personally, I often use poetry as a way to express complicated human elements. And I mean that in a way, not necessarily talking about emotion or thought. I mean it in a more of a beyond sense, right? When we are going about our daily lives, there are these sort of small moments that happen where we are sort of forced to take note of something that's going on. It could be something small, it could be something big. And for me, that is generally when my poems tend to start or tend to happen. And so for me, my poetry is expressing that. I think I'll stop there.
Well, you know what? Let's give them some of your words. Go ahead and take us to your work.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you. So this poem is called He Said My Name. He said my name is really a kiln, a hall of groundwater, because a mouth can open into hot vapor. He said my name is actually a riverbed. He said to make of my name a choking of cracked ice. He said to say my name is old water in a ditch. He said to make of my name a peach tree on fire, a palm of pollen. He said my name is really an aquifer, an astrofield, an orchestra of damp tarps in a sheep corral, a downed pole in rock springs. He said my name is as tall as a smokestack. He said my name has a tendency to cause a draft, to be a touch of tequila. He said my name is really splintered reed, heavy blue mornings in June. He said to make of my name wildfire smoke. He said to say my name is a rumor, the low beams of a pickup. He said my name is really a sermon of locusts, boulder rust in a river gorge. He said to make of my name a desert garden. He said my name is the one pink evening when you whisper your name to the moon and it whispers back a monsoon.
There you have it, a piece from Jake Skeets. Share your thoughts at 1-800-996-2848. And Jake, what inspired this poem?
It was interesting that Tate earlier was talking about names. And I think when I was at an undergraduate student at University of New Mexico in Albuquerque, I was asked about Indian names, and I was asked about on a date, actually, with a non-Native person. And for some reason, all these years later, it sort of stuck with me, just this sort of trope of the Indian name. And it's a question I'm pretty sure a lot of us get asked about. And so I was really into sort of thinking about this notion of names similar to Tate, right? The idea of the power names have. So that's really what triggered the poem. And so I wanted to sort of get to this essence of what names can be, right? And that sort of, that started that listing of all these different things that I experienced here on the reservation.
And when you are sharing yourself through poetry, what is it, you know, what other platforms does it provide? I guess, what other layers are you able to open that you couldn't with other forms of writing and expression?
I think for me, poetry is a way to remember things as well. I think often we take advantage of our daily existences. We take advantage of some of our normal family histories. When I was researching for my first book of poetry, I had to ask my parents a lot of questions about sort of just, you know, general family history, like names of people that we may have forgotten, things that may have happened just on the typical weekend. And through that action, we were able to sort of begin conversations about things that have happened before. And for me, poetry is that gateway to memory. And so when we think about time and our time here on Earth, right, we're able to navigate it a lot easier with poetry.
And for you, what opened the door to all of this? What drew you to poetry?
That is a really good question, and not an easy answer. For me, I think poetry is something that's always been the most natural part of myself. It may seem a little cliche to say that, but I tried my best to navigate away from poetry as much as I could. So when I was at UNM, I tried to major in other things outside of poetry, but for some reason, I always came crashing back. So poetry is what I stuck with, and it was able to help me get this far.
And when you are writing your work, is there a preferred time, space, or feeling that you usually will get into this mode and let the poetry out?
I think it can happen when I experience enough of my daily life where it becomes to a point where it sort of boils over. So I like to think of, again, poems as these happening during the moments when you take notice of something in your day, right? So for example, you're driving down the road and you notice the sunset really quick and you notice, oh, it's really nice colors. For me, that's a poem wanting to happen in a sense. And so when enough of those experiences happen, then I'm sort of pushed to the page in a way. And this can happen pretty much any time. I think it's a sort of it can happen when I'm driving on the road. It can happen when I'm grocery shopping. It can really happen whenever. I don't have a preferred time. It just happens.
And I like those words, pushed to the page. That's some great building of in using words in a fun way. And something that, you know, I understand when we are able to join in a circle where we feel connected for different reasons, there are different things that can happen. And when we think of LGBTQ2 poetry and making space for it and being able to hear other people who are expressing themselves, I know there's a lot that can come into this circle, understanding that there is creations connected to identity and place. And what are some of the other themes that you enjoy hearing from this circle? Tell me more, Jake.
For me, I think when we talk about this, it's for me, I guess the easiest answer would be it's a way to make memory, right? We're sort of creating a moment that will be looked back on by future poets, by future writers, people who are interested in poetry and storytelling. They'll look back on this because I'm pretty sure it'll be archived somewhere, right? That act of archiving becomes necessary in this sense. And so we're sort of creating a space for not only ourselves today, but we're creating space for future selves to just be able to navigate their existence. So for me, that's it's a really important part of making space and opening up circles is thinking not necessarily linearly, but thinking forward as well.
Sure. And Tate Walker, who's also here with us too, they also mentioned about, you know, generations. And I want to go back to something that took place, a queer poetry salon. And of course, if there's an archive that any of you can share where people can tune into that. But even just being able to hear other poets who are talking about what it means to be LGBTQ2, especially Indigenous in our Indigenous nations. And Tate, anything you want to share on that, the Queer Poetry Salon?
Yeah, so it's a fantastic space, and it's a monthly event that Equality Arizona puts on. So the space is great. It's not what was great about our show is that it featured an all Indigenous cast. And that was pretty spectacular. Queer poetry is fantastic, but Indigenous queer poetry, good stuff. But I love this idea that both Mason and Jake are talking about with this memory and like archiving, and it's, you know, there for historical purposes, and then moving beyond that and saying, you know, one thing that makes our poetry, I mean, even just today, right, different is that we're here, we're alive. And when you look at the statistics, these terrible socioeconomic statistics that exist, especially for Indigenous queer people, they're dismal, right? And we are here today showing that we'll always be here, right? And we've always been here. You know, even as the caller Michael was saying, like, oh, you know, back in the 60s or whatever, you know, we have baby boomers that remember or recall stuff, thankfully, because, I mean, as any elder and any historian will tell you, you know, and queer people have been around forever in different ways and different capacities. And I think this poetry is an extension of that, especially when you consider like the future, right? And the next gen. And I think having folks right in front of you is powerful.
Well, since we have all of you in front of us, and I know Mason has another poetry, let's add to this moment in time. Mason, please take us to another one of your works.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, here we go. This is called, I wrote this at the beginning of the pandemic, right when we were like about, I had kind of a vision about the fact that this would all happen before this all happened. And people weren't taking me seriously. It was one of those things. And I thought back to the fact that people don't often listen to Two Spirits because we are so often discarded and things like that. I was thinking about, you know, who does listen to me? What does listen to me? And I was like, my blood listens to me, you know, my chosen family and the people who are bound by oaths of blood that we've created based on the same vision or the same shared ideal or the belief in faith and creator. And then I thought about the water. I thought that women, both the women who raised me, both the women I used to be, and the women who I continue to uplift are missing and murdered in Indigenous women, and then the epidemic of Black trans women. And then I thought children, because I also work with youth in addition to working with words and, you know.
Sure. And Mason, I'm sorry, I got to jump in because we got exactly a minute before we wrap the hour. And go ahead, take it away.
Okay. Yeah. Let me get this in real quick then. This is called The Indian Summer I Long For 2020. Blood, water, women, and children. With flaming red kisses and yellow fry bread hugs, there is a love you can taste wrapped in a paper towel waiting for me. In spring, I sit with white-haired women and gray rabbits. During summer, my cousins and I are every shade from walnut to brick. Our sweet potato skins roast on beaches by the Feather and Russian rivers up north. Winters bring quiet nights with stories, singing, warm drinks, rice, and red beans. Fall nights of steamy hot springs adventures alongside Europe are chulmash gentlemen with soft smiles and thick hands. Each season, my native body radiates alchemies of survival, creates home-cooked potions to renew, family-style resilience and communal roots. I'm safest amongst my histories. I'm safest amongst my siblings, creating chaos in the soil through reverence, sacrifice, altered state of consciousness, and drumming, dancing, and intimacy. Thank you.
And thank you, Mason J., Tate Walker, and Jake Skeets. I'm Tara Gatewood. That's going to wrap it up for us today. We hope you'll meet us here tomorrow as we talk about learning loss. Thanks again. Have a great rest of your day.
Support for this program provided by the American Indian Higher Education Consortium, the collective spirit and unifying voice of 37 tribal colleges and universities. As we learn how to cope during the current pandemic, AHEC salutes the many tribal colleges and universities offering distance learning to keep our communities safe. Information on a tribal college or university near you at aihec.org.
Gegu na giwi ishichige ganawain and dizilyan ani oshki bibung, mi ishigwa dawaj gedu daman gedani mino ayayan. Ganoj eno ki de nishinabe akuzi wigamigung nawaj jigikain daman, mawadishiwain healthcare.gov. Gema Ganoj, 1-800-318-2596. Gaundinagadeg, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.